Kevin, before we get started today, I just want to say this. Now, you and I have been friends for a long time. Many years.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Many years, I would say that.
Your Honor.
bang, bang. And I think that there are a lot of... there's a lot to be commended about Kevin Newsom.
I think I like where this is going.
I think that you're a great guy, smart guy, funny guy, but I've never, ever, ever really appreciated you more than I do right now that we're sitting in heat rather than in Mark's garage with the tiny
Kevin
fucking heater.
Kevin did make this happen.
To be fair, we are at Aviary on South Lamar, where you should totally stop in sometime. That is not right now because they're closed and we're taping a show in here. But it was my friend Marco who owns and operates Aviary that actually I was mentioning to our special guest, who I'll let you introduce, that the last time that we recorded, the only other time we've ever recorded in here, was slippery when wet.
That's true.
So I can only pray that this goes better.
Nothing will ever go better than slippery. Ryan's got a scowl on his face.
I have bad dreams about that record. There's no way this couldn't be better than Slippery When Wet, because it is, in fact, a much better record.
we'll get to that in a minute. Tonight, our guest is Chris Cox, who some of you, most of you should know this. This podcast is hosted on a website, oneofus.net, and Chris started this website. Chris, hello.
Hello. It's really good to be here.
I know. We've been trying to do this for a while, and it's finally happening. I'm telling you, there's nothing superlative involved with what I just said about Kevin. If you had sat in the garage with us on many cold nights.
And we sweated in there, too. Like, we did the summer, we did August, and then we did this time of year.
Yeah, we got to figure some shit out this year when we get to summer. Anyway,
feel any better, we're actually looking into the possibility of, within the next year, getting a permanent studio in town that everyone who records for us can just go there.
Well, that's a nice idea.
Where it'll all be set up.
Very good idea.
It could happen.
Insert the laugh track.
We're working on it.
We'll cut a hole in the roof, so it'll be like one of either Kevin or Mark's garage,
because they both have holes in their garage roofs.
Yeah. Let's get into this. Let's play some theme music. Mark, can you do that for us? And we'll come back and talk about all kinds of stuff. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
I'm Chris.
This is Somebody Likes It. Okay, so I teased this a little bit before. So our guest tonight is Chris Cox. Chris?
Yes. do you have any questions for me?
I do have. Yes. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit? So most of the people, I'm sure, like they're listening to this podcast through the site, of course. But for some listeners that might be newbies, like, why don't you talk a little bit? Just tell us a little bit about oneofus.net.
On the spot, I never think about that fucking site.
All right.
oneofus.net, I describe now as a podcast network. That's a new term that's been making the rounds. I own a podcast network. That's right. Thank you very much. A podwork. Holy shit, let me write that down.
I think breaking coined that.
That's just in.
You guys were way ahead of a lot of the other shows that have, like, we've added like some like seven shows since you guys came on. Yeah. Shane and I had a long discussion one night at the Nomad Bar.
Were there beers involved?
There was a lot of beers involved. And then we had another discussion just like it, and then another one. And I was like, I'll believe it when I see it. And then he did it. And here you guys are. And I couldn't be happier. Y'all have evolved over time. You've gotten your whole thing down and your banter. You turned into a really excellent show.
Oh, thanks, man.
It was the banter, really, that we needed to work on.
And if you're wondering, the payments will continue. So thank you.
Yeah, I just saw Kevin slipping a little Little do-re-mi me under the table.
Nothing like a little grift between friends.
Hey, you know what? And thank you again for just looking out for the show. I mean, your guests keep on coming tonight.
No, clearly I made a money.
clearly. So so this is the part where like we usually like to talk. And I want to say a couple of things real quick. Where we'll talk about some like musical current events. But all this like really big shit has been happening lately where there's been like music has been tangentially connected. So like last week we talked about fucking Kanye on Saturday Night SNL 40, and we talked about Katy Perry. Now I want to talk about the Oscars, which happened last night again.
Shane saw a very pretty girl. Apparently.
I did, and
hold on, I don't want to interrupt you. The Oscars are great and all, but the Golden Globes is the greatest award ceremony of all time.
Oh no,
you're absolutely right,
100% right. Yeah. I had never watched the Golden Globes until this year's broadcast. Like, watched the whole thing, and I'm like, halfway through, Skyler and I got fucking wasted when we were watching the Golden Globes. I'm like, this is so much more fun than the Oscars.
Well, I think at the Golden Globes they get wasted.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, no, they do.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
That is exactly the point.
And they let their guards down. Drinks during the thing. You don't. Yeah. There are no tables at the Oscars.
No. Yeah.
There was apparently a shot at one point where Benedict Cumberbatch was drinking from a flask.
I saw that,
which
yeah.
I totally would have been doing if I was at the Oscars.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I wanted to, and I don't want to belabor the discussion or a brief discussion of the Oscars, but one of the things I wanted to just mention that I noticed is the reason I want to talk about the Oscars is the same reason Ryan wanted to talk about the Super Bowl. And
okay, that's fair enough.
And
I was going to make fun of you, but no, you're totally right.
And that is like anytime we've been talking about these big events, like music is tangentially related, but really what we want to talk about,
Shane saw a pretty girl,
are hot girls on these broadcasts. And so last night I was texting Ryan. I was like, what do you do? Are you watching the Oscars? He's like, no, I'm at work. And I was like, oh yeah, I just saw this incredibly. Anyway, her. I'm going to show you a picture right now.
Oh, well, she's swell.
Did I lie?
No, you were correct.
So who is this girl?
Rita Ora. She sang a song last night. So I was.
Song?
I was loaded by that point. And number one, I wasn't paying attention to anything that came out of her mouth.
I'm glad to see you do your research.
It was My Heart Will Go On.
She was all, yeah, let's just say it was Miss Misery. She had the trifecta, the black, British, and beautiful, but she had a fourth one.
Yeah, you wrote me about that, and I was like, I don't know how to put that together, but no.
Phil Lapera that talked about the triple Bs when we had Corinne Bailey Rae, and he was like, oh, yeah, she's a triple B, black, beautiful, and British. Well, this woman...
Yeah, Phil talks like that, though.
Yeah, so. She's blonde also, so this is a quadruple
B.
Quadruple B, yeah. I don't
like
know.
There's a whole
she
new
been
porn
on the
category
of the late 90s.
Maybe, yeah. Right?
Grateful. Okay, I have no idea what that song is. I promise you, I looked up from whatever I was doing because the song sounded good, and then for the next however many minutes she performed, I didn't hear anything that came out of her mouth.
It was actually a weird
She's
year.
Stunningly beautiful.
It was a weird year at the Oscars in the sense that the songs were actually kind of entertaining this year. Like Glory from Selma, first off, had everyone in the audience streaming tears down
yeah,
their face.
Like Chris
was like, Jesus Christ.
That looked like that was from Central Casting.
But you know, yeah, it's kind of, you know that either somebody, either it hit a nerve or, yeah, they were dredging up some actorly tears when fucking Chris Pine, a.k.a. Captain Kirk, there's a lingering shot on him with like tears streaming down
his
face.
You know what my theory is on that? My theory is that after you learn how to cry on cue, that it becomes like it's like super, it's like an itchy trigger finger situation.
No,
it's like the wrong thing could set you off, and your eyes just start spewing.
It's
tears,
like breaking the seal. It's like once you pee once.
Yeah.
At the party, then...
Yeah, now you're the guy that cries all the time.
You guys live in a real Twilight Zone-y perception of the world, don't you?
Right.
I dropped my glasses. It's like,
hold on, Mark. Mark, why don't you just say explain what you're holding up right now?
Well, I did a quick search for this girl that you were enamored by, and they said that she went underwearless at the Oscars post-party.
Good God.
And so there's a picture of her here.
And she's tattooed... I mean, Ryan. Do you understand why I texted you now?
She's really hot.
She's a very pretty lady.
Yeah, that's ridiculously hot.
Like, all of the levity has, like, tamped. Once Mark produced that picture, like, everybody's, like, being so, like, blah, 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 blah. Now they're all, like, it's all reverent and hushed tone.
Pretty.
But say, Everything Is Awesome was amazing. That performance they did on that. And that goes to show when Disney throws their money down.
Well,
but,
Lady Gaga was a fucking knocked it out of the park. Well, I mean,
Go ahead.
No, please.
One of the things that that we chatted about for a minute before we started taping was that both Chris and I ran into a very similar situation, which was we didn't recognize who Lady Gaga was without the meat dress.
Yeah, no idea.
And so here's this ingenue singing Sound of Music, and I was like, well, she's clearly very talented, but she's in a room of very talented people, and I don't know who the hell that is. And literally my wife was like, that's Lady Gaga.
Like, Stephanie. Yeah,
pretty much exactly that way.
I mean, I thought, like, that shock there was from a lot of people who didn't see her performance during the Grammys, which was very apparently, like, sedate with Tony Bennett. And was it people were like, really? From Lady Gaga? And this coming out all class. People were still like, wait a minute, what's happening here? And I, you know, yes, she was great, but I was disappointed. I wanted to see her come out, like, riding a unicorn and with UFOs attacking her and stuff. I
want to see anybody come out riding a unicorn with UFOs attacking them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Ryan, when you weren't around, and that is, like, Lady Gaga's continuing to grow as a performer. At some point, you reach in my opinion, like, you get to a point where the meat dresses, you just have to keep piling on and piling on and piling on. And I think it's fucking... like, it's not a step back for her being more sedate, at least in what she's wearing. In the kind of music that she's singing, she's taken a sideways step, and it's very interesting, and I think it's a forward movement my mind.
No, I think maybe this is her new shocking.
Yeah,
that's
right.
My point. Like,
it was shocking that she was not wearing something shocking.
Dress, really.
It was.
Yeah.
She was wearing this.
That's true.
It was amazing. Her vocal range was ridiculous. I was so blown away by her performance. But also, we didn't talk about the fact that she's wearing this, like, really angelic white sequin dress with red rubber dishwashing gloves. Like, that looked like Robin, like the kind of gloves that, like, Robin in the Batman comics wear or something. Like, it would stick out to the side a little bit. You know, why are you casting a dubious... Dude, you didn't watch
this.
I didn't see
the thing. I was... waiting tables.
That's why I'm trying to let you.
I appreciate it. You're painting a great picture for
thank
me.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, here's the other thing that one thing that I did not actually pick up on in the immediate that was pointed out to me later in the evening was that with those songs in the Oscars, they tend to like have the performance closest to the actual award giving away that is the one that's going to win. And I don't know if that's always been that way, but, I mean, certainly the way that it turned out last night. I was a big fan. I really got a kick out of the movie Begin Again.
I did, too.
And they ran that one very early. That was the one that was who's the dude from the New Radicals that we did?
The guy who dances in malls?
With the fisherman?
Yeah, yeah. But that guy, that's the guy that wrote the hit song from that movie. And that's another one that maybe if we ever do a movie thing that some point down the road,
right,
it'd be a fun one to cover.
I love Beginning, but I thought Once, which is the same director and writer.
Sure, sure.
Like, I was like, when I was watching Beginning, I was like, man, these guys are totally ripping off Once. Yeah, I had no idea it was the same guy.
Well,
but all the songs are great in both movies, so, you know.
And that Judd Apatow was involved. It's just weird. But anyway, but that was very early, and I thought there were a couple of instances... Without going too far down the rabbit hole, there are a couple of instances where they put individual singers on stage, and Adam Levine happened to be the one, and like that, he just seemed like, frankly, a little overwhelmed by the moment, and they were early in the thing, and it was kind of fun to see that dude rattled.
He was there entirely because he has convinced his agent that he has a chance of being taken seriously as an actor.
Yeah,
I don't think the rest of the world is convinced.
No,
I'm gonna say real quick, I'm watching Ryan almost fall asleep. So
I'm not falling asleep.
We probably need to get
I'm all
to,
here. I do think we need to probably push
to
on to the matter
forward.
At hand.
let's talk about the task at hand this evening is
Sonic Youth Goo.
Sonic Youth Goo, which, well, all in due time. But Chris, you picked this album this week, and why don't you Just fill us in a little bit about how you feel about it.
Well, let me start off by saying I was like post my interest in post-punk started with Daydream Nation, where this friend of mine who I was kind of become my guru was like throwing me stuff like Dekreutzen and things like that. It's like, check this out. It's like, okay. And he threw me Sonic Youth Daydream Nation. And I went, I don't understand this album at all. It really took me 3-4 months before I finally was like, wait a minute, I get it. I'm so fucking crazy about it. It was
Goo?
No. First Daydream Nation. It was really like, it felt, you know, almost anarchistic in the way that it was structured. I didn't understand it. And finally coming around to it, which seems so quaint and, you know, by nowadays standards, but for back then, it really was like, wow, I'd never heard anything like this. And then go on a couple of years of how do we follow that up? There was a big problem with Daydream Nation because the label had lots of issues. I believe it was Enigma. And they kind of buried the distribution. It didn't get a lot of distribution, and they were fighting for it. It was hard to find a copy in record stores. So they left Enigma and went to their first major record label, which was Offset of Geffen DGC. Records,
yeah.
DGC. We're like, okay, we know we're going to get distribution, and presumably there was some amount of consciousness, like, we're going to have to make a slightly more accessible record than we've been doing.
It was the beginning of a 5-record deal, though, right?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly, like, the most consciously, like, we need to at least have a song that's plausible it could be a radio hit on this album. But that being said, I think they still managed to make an album. Whereas in comparison to Daydream Nation, it is not the masterpiece that album is. But it was startling that a band who so really in many ways drastically toned down their signature sound and made it a little more accessible made such a phenomenal album. All but maybe two songs on this record, which are the prerequisite Sonic Youth, This Is Just Noise Dirges songs on it.
I'm curious what you think those were, because we were talking a little bit before the show.
It's like, Mildred Pierce and Scooter and Jenks.
So so Mildred Pierce is my second favorite song on this record. That's interesting. But I didn't come from a place where like for some reason I was thinking about this, Ryan, when I was listening to this album. I was like, you know, for two dudes that probably saw 10,000 indie rock shows together in the 90s,
seen many shows in a row.
That's why he looks as tired as he looks.
No,
right,
Shane
now.
And I would get wristbands to South by when they were like, I don't know, 25 or 30
$25.
Yeah, and we'd like just go see everything,
band
and we could
band.
Get into every show, just walk right up. Yeah. And
those days are
case.
Gone.
Yeah, not just that, but also like both of us were working. Like we were working day jobs that we had to get up relatively early and stay up till 2. You would crash on my couch, get up and go into work at 8, and like I remember one time your boss was like, you smell like liquor, and you like told me that she said that, and she was like, if you smell like liquor again, then I'm gonna fire you. We were supposed to go see a show that night, like Syncola or something, and I was like, just eat some Altoids. You're like, oh yeah, I never thought about that. And then you never had any more problems after that.
Yeah, I wasn't all that bright.
Yeah,
it turns out.
Good Lord,
yeah.
Syncola.
So, yeah, I know. But for two guys that witnessed a lot of indie rock together, we really haven't done a show yet with an indie rock featuring an indie rock album. I mean, like,
well, we did Yola Tango.
Yeah, that's a pretty definitive Yola.
Well,
like,
I mean,
indie rock band.
True, but I mean, what I mean, and you know, Ty Segall is sort of like a modern indie rock musician. But what I mean is like a noisier rock band. I mean, Yola Tango definitely has its noisy moments, like definitely. But that's
in terms of rock and roll indie.
Yeah, right. Like noisy rock and roll. So I never really. I never really warmed up to Sonic Youth, not because I don't like their stuff and not because I don't like noise, because I do. It's just there's a lot of noise without a lot of variation sometimes, and so like that I've heard.
They've got a very definitive sound. Like when you hear Sonic Youth, you know it's Sonic Youth.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I like it, and I like this record, but I didn't like this record as much as I liked Daydream Nation, and I think it was because of, and normally I'm a pop songwriting guy.
This is
true.
3-minute
long songs. You know.
Are you sure?
Yes.
But you're right. I mean, Daydream Nation is the better record. I just think that this is kind of a masterpiece in its own way because it was that concession to try and be to smooth things out a bit, and it still is a phenomenal rock
record. Well, it's okay. So, like, they threw down the gauntlet with cool thing. I think it was their...
That was like, their pop radio.
Yeah, that was like, here we go, kids. We're going to take over the top 40. And
it did chart.
Did it?
Yeah, it charted.
I mean, it's the only song I knew before.
Probably like it's the position 705, yeah. But, you know.
Well, I also couldn't figure out, like, I knew that song, but I also couldn't figure out if it were that song or the multitudes of songs that song spawned.
There were actually three singles off that album.
I'm saying is that there were other, I mean, that song essentially is a Nirvana song. I mean, if you...
Well, and you said the N-word that we're going to get into...
The N-word that you can actually say the whole rest of it?
Yes, Nirvana. And it's impossible to listen to this record without thinking about Nirvana. But
and it was all at that same time.
I do think we should go in and hear a little bit of Cool Thing, and then we can come back out. And
I think that's a great idea. Why don't we do that? Mark, can you hook us up with that?
Doing all the Chuck D parts when they pop up.
Oh, man. Well, I just think it's hilarious. Like,
oh, no.
He doesn't belong in that song. I love Public Enemy so much.
And he literally did not belong in that song. You know what happened, right?
No.
They were, all right, they shared a producer who was doing double time in the studio that day, like overseeing Sonic Youth and overseeing Public Enemy, who were recording in the studio right next door. And he mentioned to them, like, Sonic Youth, yeah, I'm recording Public Enemy 2, I gotta run back and forth. And they were like, oh, we would love to meet those guys, can you come over? And Chuck D came over and was like, I'm a huge fan of you guys, like, you want to be on a track?
Tell them about it. Get away with her.
Hey, Cool Thing, come here. Sit down beside me. There's something I gotta ask you. I just want to know, what are you going to do for me? I mean, are you going to liberate us girls from male, white, corporate oppression?
Tell like it is.
Huh?
Yeah.
Don't be shy.
Word up.
Literally, it was like spur of the moment, bring him in, let's do it.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, you know, you've got this, like, sort of, like, left field, like, freaky art rock noise piece, and then it's like, word up.
It's like the omnipresent voice of a hip hop god that just pops in out of the sky.
That's a really good way to put it. Thank you.
But making you know a song that is like to like not really about female empowerment altogether, other than the fact that Kim Deal is actually singing
like, hey,
for
cool
once.
Thing. Are you gonna save us from the white male corporate oppressors? And he's like, yo,
word
like,
up.
Yeah. I'll talk to my lawyer and get back to you. but like it was nice to see. It was kind of a big moment in music at that point. That here was this guy who was like definitely the king of rap music at that point, acknowledging that the female struggle was just as important at that point. As John Lennon said, woman or the nigger is the nigger of the world.
John Lennon did say that.
Yeah.
I don't think the rest of us are allowed to say that word anymore. Yeah.
You can only say it in the context of a song title.
Oh, yeah, in quotes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll say woman is the Nirvana of the world.
There you go.
I like to
the
think
other N-word.
Yeah,
the other N-word. Occur through this podcast. Go ahead.
No. This, I like to think of the song as the radio song of the
it was the one
rock world.
It was the one that was on the 120 minutes compilation, which is how
No, you're not understanding what I'm saying.
Oh,
radio song by
R.E.M. No,
KRS-One.
I actually think
baby.
Well, no, and I think R.E.M. like heard this and was like, oh, we can do that too.
DJs communicate to the masses.
Yeah,
sex and violent
I do. I actually think this. That Cool Thing is more successful at their stab at this than R.E.M. was.
It's
agreed.
So much of a better song that they don't even deserve to be put in the same conversation. which is why I just put them in the same conversation.
Hey, thanks for that.
And even though this is...
Flash is a genius, dude.
I mean, Flashes of Genius. It's Shane Flashes of Genius Bartell.
Is that going to be the title?
Occasional
of
Genius. Shane Bartell.
Flashes
sorry.
Of Genius, yes.
Sophisticated teenage moon.
Mark just reminded me of Kevin just coined a new term last broadcast, which was... it's like a fist against the moon of a teenage.
Was that?
Like, what did you say?
It was off the cuff, and it was
genius.
It's the fist against the moon of a teenager, which is
fist against the moon of a teenager.
I explained it last week. Listen to the last podcast.
I know, it just needs to be on a plaque somewhere.
It sounds like underage teenage fisting is what that sounds
like. Well. Yeah. Hopefully
there's
not.
A rabbit hole we don't want to go down.
Hey, wait, let's talk for the rest of the show about this new thing that you've just proposed, Chris. Hey, but you had something you wanted to read about this record, Kevin.
Well, no, I think there are a few things that are pretty interesting about it. I can't believe that we're this far in the podcast and I've not once mentioned. So I think this is one area, Shane, where you and I are probably a little bit simpatico. Like I don't necessarily know that I have not bonded with Sonic Youth. I will say that there are bands that are in the same genre of the same time period who I have grown to really appreciate, and Sonic, and maybe it's just the. It feels to me like a combination of the New York thing and taking pains to be dissonant. Like, it's like, and I don't know if it's just because, like, I have a pop sensibility on that stuff too. And like, anyway, there are, and the funny thing is, like, so you read the reviews, some of the reviews that were written about this record. David Fricke from Rolling Stone wrote a piece that it was like, essentially, like, the first line of it is, "Oh my God, it sounds like they're doing this on purpose." Like, that was essentially, like, his take on it was that he was... But they were all, like, clearly, all of the music critics had pushed their chips to the middle of the table on this band, and they were like, "We love what these guys are about," when... Anyway, it was like there's a dissonance there that you have to sort of wade through to get to the... Whatever, the Tootsie Roll pop in the middle.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's even necessarily completely true. I know what you're saying, and it certainly comes, you're coming at it from the outside in that way. I think that, like, when you read stuff Thurston, especially Lee Rinaldo, who I think is the heart of that entire band, really,
sure.
Like, has to say about, like, why they were doing this in the first place, it's kind of the idea that, like, you know, it's the way, like, different cultures have different tone structures that appeal to them and they don't appeal to others because you get used to them and they build. And the idea that dissonance in and of itself can be just as pleasant and appealing as something that, as we think of, as more traditional tone structures. And I think Sonic Youth, if anything, and Yo La Tengo as well in a big way, really mm-hmm. proved that, yes, that is going to be true for some people.
But it's also the sound of Slack. Which is it's intentionally structured, or at least it sounds like, to at least one set of ears, like it's sort of it's intended to sound like it's
it's intentionally avant,
out. Like yeah,
like it's
sure,
trying
sure.
to be
oh no
not
question.
Pop
yeah,
but I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I like noisiness. I don't like we talked about this last week when we reviewed the Modern Lovers record. There's just a point in the middle of almost all those songs where the dissonant solos go on a little bit too long. I mean, there's a point where, for me, in my taste, where it starts to get a little much. But the thing about Sonic Youth that I wanted to touch on, kind of what you were saying, in that it's the critics that make them into a serious band. It's like the noisiness of the band
right.
make them into a serious band, and that puts it in my head. And I think. Likewise, in your head,
sure.
is treating them a little less seriously because of the reverence that they're treating. Not to say they're not a great band, because
right.
they are a great band, and they're a groundbreaking band, but because...
But you get sick of the reverence.
Well...
It's the reverence, yeah. Why is it...
Well, it's like you'd hang this record in a gallery or something, you know? Like,
I'm pretty sure...
That's a great way to put it.
In fact, the album cover of this was based on a Raymond Pettibone painting that did indeed...
Hanging in a gallery.
Yes. That's a great. It's one of those. I'm not going to say this record in particular, I feel it. I can see reading some of the reviews and they're talking about how it's more of an accessible record. However, I think some of the songs that are geared, the accessibility of some of the songs kind of takes down the originality and the listenability, at least in my ear, down a couple of pegs. Like we're gonna listen to Tunic in a minute, which was the one I was
hoping Tunic to song here. Song yeah. for Karen. That is my favorite song on this album,
and that's my least favorite song on this album. I think
clearly Chris is right and you are wrong.
clearly,
yeah. I like this guy. Yeah,
Ryan, well, that's why yeah. I put you guys together tonight.
Let's team up again, Shane, for the rest of the podcast.
Hey, wait a minute! I'm going to take the fucking jerky. That's what's causing so much.
Dude, you're a vegetarian.
All right. Well, you I don't want to eat it. I don't want to eat your fucking jerky. I just want to. You broke bread. In the form of meat, dried meat, and now you're just going to gang up with me for the next...
Kevin?
Yeah, so Shane, you mentioned that I had a little something that I wanted to share. This is another one of these records that, you know, we've talked off and on this podcast about how some online magazines, we'll call this one Pitchfork, tend to
make that up.
Is that air quotes?
Yes,
Pitchfork.
Quotes,
we'll call
yes.
it
italics.
More or less Pitchfork.
Exactly.
I'm not going to say the name, but it rhymes with Bitchmork.
Exactly. It's Pitchfork or Pitch.
Anyway, so these guys, you know, this is another one of these where it's like these records find critical success, and then after they've been out for a while, it's like, hey, let's go back and re-review this, and they always get stellar reviews. It's amazing. So,
yeah, 30 years after the fact.
Right, exactly.
We're just going to pick a couple ones that had pretty amazing reviews before.
And this, you know, let's be honest, this record predates the internet. So, or like, not the ARPANET, but the, you know, the
sure.
popular
the wide
version
usage
of
the World Wide Web.
Exactly. So, anyway, I won't go into the whole thing here, but part of what gets shared in this Pitchfork send-up, they gave it an 8.5, so showing restraint.
And this was the review of the re-release with the endless amount of demo tracks, right?
Good, yeah, good Lord, yeah, seriously, like, yeah, there's lots and lots of subtext. I won't go through all of it, but I'll just read an excerpt here that they talk a little bit about Brian Coley, who is a story they term as a storied zinester, come storied music critic, and a renowned this part the first letter in all caps friend of Thurston.
I laughed at that too.
and then they also fold in something that was written by their A&R guy, and so, like, you know, you can sort of add up the dominoes here. But anyway, the interesting, this is what Byron Coley had to say. Some longtime fans were already croaking that the band was moving in a raucous direction, leaving behind the avant noise roots that had marked their early history. Of course, this was a kind of happy horseshit. Sonic Youth had been rocking the fuck out of it from the get-go. They were doing it just in a language that most people didn't understand.
And I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree with it either. But
it's hilarious to me that some people would cry sellout for, like, this record.
Right.
Right. Which, well, and that's the thing. It's like, okay, so it's in a language that most people don't understand.
You know, this was at the
time. Is that better?
This was at the time when people were first starting to yell sellout at bands, though, for doing stuff. You know, yeah, this is around then, like, oh, these bands, the whole, like, I don't think, like, classic rock fans looked at, like, when Led Zeppelin Physical Graffiti came out. They were like, fucking sellout.
Right,
I don't think it was until indie rock and punk that people were like, oh shit, they toned down their sound a little.
They signed a major label. It must be fucking sellouts, man. Yeah,
I was reading
assholes.
A little excerpt from Kim Gordon's book, which is coming out tomorrow. And she points out that, like, at any point along Sonic Youth's career, like even after their first album, there were these people that would come out and say, oh, they're selling out. Because it wasn't what the previous album was to them.
Oh, you know? And every album was really different.
I think that's common, yeah. You know, for any band that's doing groundbreaking stuff.
Well, you listen to the first two or three Sonic Youth albums, they pretty much invented noise rock, pretty much. And it's noise rock, their first. I mean, it's noisy. The first EP is
I've never heard Lou Reed's Metal Machine Music, but I understand that that's some noisy shit.
No, but even he didn't consider that serious. That was a contractual obligation album.
Label,
yeah, that was not. He did not take that seriously. But yeah, it's they. In terms of, like, yeah, they were speaking a different language. They were. They were trying to do something that they did not think they were going to get a huge amount of fans for. They were doing it because they were fucking into it.
They played for a couple of years in New York where, like, almost nobody came to their shows.
No, huh?
Like, they were really underappreciated. And then finally, like, you know, they hit the zeitgeist and people started coming out. As opposed to somebody like the Strokes who, like, you know, we're playing out.
Well,
for
the Strokes,
like,
were on the backs of bands. Like, I mean, and not to take away anything from the Strokes. I mean, that's
those, yeah. But they had like
brilliant
overnight success
because of the
of people like Sonic Youth.
Right,
although
right,
I
Wire.
Although I did have a lot of fun with the "Is this shit" jokes going on at the time.
Is this shit?
hey, listen. We gotta listen to
Tunic.
Yeah, let's listen to Tunic, and then. We're going to get to an intermission shortly, so yeah.
Do it. Play that.
It's the jerky and the whiskey.
Hey, it's the whiskey over here. I just got
in the morning zoo. Thank you.
I feel like that happens about once a show.
Yeah, we're having a little retard
where
moment over here.
Down. Well, we just decided, like, if Ryan, we were talking about how, so Chris hasn't done the show before, and Mark and Kat. So again, we are recording at Aviary, which is a wine bar here in Austin, and it's right next door to this amazing imported beer store, Witchcraft, and
it's a beer nerd store.
It is, and so, but because we acknowledge that it's a beer nerd store, we acknowledge, and all of us acknowledge this, including the two
beer nerds
that Kevin and Mark are beer nerds. Which is, there's nothing wrong with that. We're just stating the obvious. And so,
I'm a beer nerd too. I'm not.
We all are, but
we were acknowledging that there's class on one side of the table.
There's class on one side of the table. Kevin
and
Mark,
there's whiskey and jerky
and
on the other.
There's whiskey and jerky on the other side. And Ryan had posited that if we were to have a morning zoo show, it'd be like, it's whiskey and the jerky.
It's the whiskey and the jerky in the morning.
Aruga.
Not that it wouldn't be in the morning though. You realize this? Like, it would be like 12, 10.
Well, we could play it in the morning. We just have to tape it another time.
The day before.
Well, you know, we do. We actually do a morning show for subscribers called The Breakfast Pub that is, like, filmed early in the day where we just go ahead and start drinking.
Nothing wrong with that.
I think that Ryan and I should participate in that show.
Well, the only problem, if you guys did that show, you couldn't take any callers. It'd be like, This show was previously recorded 7 hours ago, so please don't call.
Yeah, these guys are dead asleep right now.
We'd have to have people submit questions online, and then we'd read them.
Sure.
Whiskey and Jerky is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Of people that are already asleep.
It would be the Whiskey and the Jerky.
But, okay.
But before we...
it says like Whiskey and the Jerk.
Yeah.
It sounds more like a 70s cop film there.
It kind of does.
It's a good 70s cop film. Yeah.
Before we circle back into the record, I did just want to say thanks to our friends at Witchcraft. They came by and brought us some cool stuff that they had been pouring this week, and they didn't ask for it, but I mentioned that we'd give them a little love on the
yeah. They have a lot of really good beer, which we consumed a lot of for free that they brought by.
That is very, very nice of them.
Here's hoping it helps.
Again, Kevin. again, I just can't speak highly enough of you.
Well, here's the thing, Shane.
I sweated you out in my garage for weeks on end. Then it got cold. Then I made sure that there are little screaming people that so you wouldn't want to come over at all. Then we had to go over to Mark's. We did that for a while, and then now we're doing something else.
At least for one night, we're sitting in heat.
Hey, this is a classy joint, you guys.
Can I rein this in for a minute? We did just listen to Tunic.
Yes,
Karen. From Sonic Youth.
Why don't people wear more tunics, by the way? Like, that's like, I'd like to see people looking like they just went to a toga party.
Some places they do.
Well, yeah, it's called
fraternity.
It's called the Renaissance Festival.
Okay.
But talk about the song. Ryan, what was your take on...
I think it's a great song. It meanders, for sure, but it's expansive and... You know, it's about Karen Carpenter, which you wouldn't necessarily expect. Like, you know, the Carpenters were about as sedate a pop band as you can get.
You can't get a band more different than Sonic Youth as the Carpenters. Right.
But for some reason, Kim Gordon, like, you know, felt an affinity for Karen Carpenter and wrote a song for her.
Had they been more sedate, they would either be sleeping or in Karen Carpenter's current state. So,
meaning no longer alive. So, yeah, for those who don't know, Karen Carpenter had anorexia and died of a heart attack due to said condition.
But she was also a drummer, which is pretty badass. If you think about a
there's
woman
not a
that
lot of
slight,
like, yeah, yeah, there's not a lot of like pop drummers in the world. What do we got?
Phil Collins.
Sheila E. Phil Collins. Yes, yeah. Of course. Thank you.
Is he a female pop drummer.
Yeah. Have you heard him?
That always,
I can feel it. No.
Oh, you're just going to... I'm sorry. It popped in my head. Now I have to say it. What has nine arms and sucks?
Oh, God.
Def Leppard.
All right. So here's the thing. For me, I'm just going to say personally why I love the song so much. And I didn't initially. This was not my favorite song of this album because I hadn't really gone back and listened to Evol yet, which in retrospect, looking back at all their albums, like it's right up there with Daydream Nation. Like, oh, it's so good. But this is the song on this album that's the most like what they were doing on Evol, which is sort of haunting, a little bit creepy. It's very sonorous with sort of its sounds of bells and the way that Ronaldo strings plays his guitar. It's just kind of haunting.
Well, and I'm not terribly surprised that Shane's not crazy about it because it doesn't really get to the point, but that's kind of not the point.
Well, no, I don't mind that. No, it gets to a point too quick. It just, in the beginning, like it actually gets more and more interesting as the song goes on. Just in the beginning of it, it's just kind of a second rate rock song from 1990. I mean, for me, like the way that the song is structured, it's just not that good of a. It's just,
you're allowed to think that.
And I do think that one of the things that we run into when we listen to records that are dated, is that we and all I will say among the three of us who have been doing this particular podcast the longest, like when we say things are of their time, it's typically a little bit dismissive. Like,
I've got a note on here that says definitely an album of its time.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. When I listened to this, I could not stop thinking about Nirvana and how if you like Nirvana was almost inevitable. If you take, you know, the prominence of Sonic Youth at the time and just add in the Beatles, you get Nirvana. Like, you know, you throw in like this Sonic Assault and put in some pop craftsmanship, you get Nirvana.
That's the new. By the way, that's the name of the video game I've been producing for iPhones. Sonic Assault.
Sonic Assault.
Yeah.
Can't wait to play that.
Yeah, you're gonna.
As long
love
as I don't
it.
Have
yeah,
to pay. You know. Like, is it freemium?
No, because what happens is if you want to have freemium,
yeah.
If you want to be, yes, that it is. So I was writing in my notes, like when I'm listening to this record, you can clearly see a delineation of, in my mind at least, you can clearly see a delineation of what alternative, finger quotes, music was going to be in the next couple of years. Like this album came
alternative.
Out. Alternative. Alternative music. This album came out in 1990. Nirvana put out Nevermind in 1991. And then Nirvana got lumped in with the grunge.
Soundgardens, your
Alice
in Chains.
Alice in Chains. Yeah. You know, you have this more this sludgy classic rock leaning.
It was metal
stuff,
more or less.
Basically, slowed down a little bit, and then you have Nirvana and what happened you know, its ilk, bands that were never as big as that, but basically the first part of the 90s where rock and roll was. You can see that fork in the road. This album clearly was like the start sign. Like, are you going to follow what this sounds like, which a lot of bands did, or are you going to follow what Led Zeppelin was? Are you going to go down the Pearl Jam?
Yeah, are you going to be Dinosaur Rock, or are you going to be like...
Or are you going to go down Dinosaur Jr.?
Or alternately, Iggy Pop was a huge influence on a lot of the grunge bands, like Mudhoney in particular, right, that other way that it was going.
But that's what I'm saying. But Mudhoney is a great example. I mean, you have the Meldons, you have all these, you know, there are a lot of other... that's what I'm saying. Like, but this album sort of, to me, I just imagine in my mind, like, there's like a forked road, and at the end of one of those forks is like a big flashing sign, like Sonic Youth, Sonic Youth. Are you going to come this way? And that's the noisier, more interesting path. And like, you don't think that you guys love to just pile up on me about like pop music and lyrics, which, I mean, is true to some degree. But I don't have an issue with noise, just in and of itself. I just have an issue with shitty songs, and I happen to think this song is a shitty song. Until it gets noisier.
By the way, does anybody ever think, like, what does Kim Gordon sound like on Christmas morning? Oh, thanks. This present is really terrific.
This is really great.
Right. That's her kind of her whole gig, is that sort of, like, sleepy, like, she's a... kind of like sultry,
disaffected, sort of like legacy to the era of Nico,
and partially because she really can't sing. I mean, she really can't. She can barely sing.
Ever compare Kim Gordon to Nico. Nico is the most useless person in an amazing band ever. Like,
was she the Bez of Velvet Underground?
Was she the what?
The Bez. Ryan knows who Bez is.
Oh, the Bez.
No, Bez.
Bez from Happy Mondays.
Happy Mondays.
Who didn't really do much anything. Well, no, Bez didn't sing or anything. No, I guess he would shake maracas.
But by the way, let me tell you guys this real quick, since you brought up Bez. So Happy Mondays has a new Pumer. Hey, they have a new Pumertation.
Puberty humor?
I don't even know what's
going on. Did you see the Pumer on that chick?
It's like you put a guy in a closed-down bar, you give him 17 beers, and he can't talk anymore.
Hey, there's heat in here. I'm just going to go lay on the stairs. No, there's a new Happy Mondays been put together, and the only two original members that I know of are Sean Ryder, the singer,
and Bez,
who did nothing.
Oh, my God, that's great. I totally want to. I hope they're here for South Park.
I'd love that if that happened. Hey, guys, we are going on way too long, which is great.
We've got to get to the intermission.
It's time to hit an intermission, and it's my pick this week, and we'll talk about it in a second. So, hey, Mark, let's do a few minutes with.
I have that right.
Are we on? Yeah, let's do it. We were just chatting about this song. So today...
did he point at you with his eyes?
No, I just pointed at the keyboard with his fingers.
Wait, we are on?
No, we're on.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So we... So today, for a few minutes with, I picked a song by the band Land of Talk. They're a Canadian band, or were a Canadian band, on Saddle Creek here in the States. Bright Eyes is
of Nebraska.
From Nebraska. What's that? What'd you say?
They immigrated.
Yeah.
Like everyone from Canada does eventually.
Yes. Well, at least they put their music out.
Canada's our largest state.
Yeah. Canada. America's hat.
Yes, America's hat.
What was... never mind.
Anyway, Land of Talk.
Anyways, Land of Talk. And the name of the song is Corey Hems. And,
Corey Haynes.
Yes. No, Mark is on fire tonight. I don't know why you don't have a fucking mic.
Seriously.
maybe that's why.
and not literally on fire. I don't mean like he's...
He's not like Richard Pryor over
somebody
here.
Put him out.
He's like a Tibetan monk that's... I don't know. So anyway, so...
Tibetan?
That's why he's Tibetan. He's a Tibetan.
He's a Tibetan monk.
Sorry, and I hate to interrupt the Discordia, but can I at least say... I love this record, and I love this band, and I'm so happy that you picked this, except for the fact that, like, somewhere down the line, we would have just done this whole album. And you and I didn't know that each of us knew this record. And like, this song is great. And it wasn't the single off this album. And I think it's a really cool one that you picked.
I can't stop listening to it since I got turned on to them.
This is such a Shane song to love.
Oh, it's very me. Did you like this song, Ryan?
Oh, I love it.
I knew that you would. And the thing that was this, so we just watched this video. And then, so anyway, the name of the song is cool. We never got to this whole thing. It's Land of Talk. They're a Canadian band. This album came out in 2010, and the name of the song is Quarry Hymns. And actually, I was on the way to a podcast at Mark's house a few weeks ago, and I heard it as background music. And I like sent myself it was just in the background of an NPR show or the Q, like the CBC show. Mm-hmm. And I like had to like text myself.
Oh, the one that
like,
Gian Gomeshi used to host. The scandal.
Before the scandal, yeah. So I got home and I'm like I did all the work and I found it and I was already a little bit drunk from doing the show and I listened to it and then continued to listen to it probably till the sun came up. And the rest of the record is brilliant.
Well, and it is one of those albums that you can kind of listen to on repeat for a while, especially if you connect with this record. Like, it's sort of hard not to connect with it all the way. Anyway, again, I think it's a fine choice.
It's a good example of a lot of the cool stuff that was coming out of Toronto in the early
Montreal.
Oh, well, I'm saying, Montreal. But it sounds like a lot of the Toronto, like if you,
sure.
Like we were talking, during the break when we were watching the video, we were talking about Emily Haynes, how she sounds.
Well, no, I was trying to figure out, like, who does this remind me of? Like, her voice sounds really familiar, and you were right, it was Emily Haynes from Metric.
Did you actually say what the name of the song and band was here?
Yeah, I just said it. Yeah, Quarry Hymns by Land of Talk.
Okay,
yeah.
Just making sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I know, we didn't, I kept talking, we were all so excited about it, but yeah, and I'll say it again, it's... Name of the song is Quarry Hymns, and the name of the band is Land of Talk. So, you're right, but there was a lot of really interesting music coming out of Canada in the first part of the 2003, 2004 through probably, 2012. It was, in my opinion, the most exciting place in the world for like melodic, independent music. I mean, just really a lot of cool stuff coming out of Canada at that time. Anyway, so. There's a lot of stuff going on in the song, like it's just a basic rock band setup, but it's just like lush.
But she has that ingenue voice, which, you know,
right? And
always going to slay me.
Yeah, but I mean that's the first thing that you notice about the song. One of the cool things about like the drums and the bass stay the same throughout the song, pretty much at least in the verse and the chorus. And there's like this chiming guitars and. And the thing that really kills it is when they triple track the vocals in the chorus to make it to take it up. Instead of the drums getting louder, instead of the cymbals getting louder and the snares getting louder, the only thing they do to differentiate it sonically is to add more tracks to the vocals. Like she's singing the same thing. It's just tracked over and over again to add that illusion of dynamics. But really, there's no dynamic change.
Well, and one thing that I think is kind of an interesting counterpoint that you bring up is like typically when you talk about when Shane has talked about double tracking and triple tracking on the vocal side in podcasts past, it's usually to cover something up. But in this particular case, it seems to be to draw out or accentuate that particular part of the song.
Right. Well, we're all familiar with that stuff, and where you like Elliott Smith did it a lot. In fact, almost constantly, where he would sing a line and then sing the same line on a different track, and then you put them together, and even though they're incredibly like close, incredibly similar things that person is singing, the differences, which are so minute, give the impression of largeness.
And they've scientifically proven to destroy your soul while you're listening to them in a beautiful, beautiful, tearing you apart into pieces sort of way.
If listening to Elliott Smith is destroying my soul, then
you don't want to have a soul no more.
Yeah.
That's the best. Hey, you just came up with the country. Hey, you know what? Why don't we let people listen to this song? Right?
To sing this quarry under, with the mirror and the powder.
So I know Chain is always a big lyrics guy. So Chain, lyrically,
are you calling me Chain? Because that's what it sounds like.
Chain. Jane is always a big lyric. Anyway, that was his weird alter ego when he used to
karaoke.
Perform back in the day. Or yeah, I'm with the kids like to call him karaoke.
When, when he was the mom on Modern Family.
Everybody knows Chain very like it, except Chain from Cuba.
Anyway, the point being, you have always been a lyrics dude. And so, there's a lot to digest here. Digest that?
There's nothing to digest. It's like a beautiful pile of nonsense. I'm going to read some of the lyrics.
Would you call it delicious nonsense?
Delicious nonsense. It's a beautiful pile of delicious nonsense. I'm going to read these lyrics, and then I want to talk about this video because I want to get you guys' take on what's going on. And by the way, you guys, it's on YouTube. Again, Land of Talk, Corey Hems. And you can go, not Corey Hames.
Quarry? As like a rock quarry?
Quarry as in where you dig up rocks.
Yes.
And then hymns like one would find in church.
Yeah. Where you would sing about said rocks.
Right.
Yes. In church.
So, okay. So here are the lyrics. I'm going to read you the lyrics from the first verse. Leaving on the hottest day to sink this quarry under with the motor on the private ring, lion quell your kingdom. Wrote it on the stolen heart. I couldn't keep the words in you. You had to learn about the hardest things. A softer side I'll leave you. And on days like these, I could take apart my window. So let down. I was so let down. So how deep is this hole I'm filling in? Sing our lights out. Down the quarry, down. So in this video, it's essentially... essentially, there are...
Don't be such a fashion nugget.
Sure. You want me to wait? You want me to park this car for a minute?
I'm sorry.
I will pull over.
Beep, Chris beep, and I talk beep. In the back of the bus.
Just go ahead and,
So just me and Shane is lame all the time.
No, Shane, you know what? Here's Shane's a fine student. Shane, please.
Oh, thanks. Sorry. I didn't know. What?
You have the floor now, dog.
For the record, I did bring enough gum for the entire class, so...
Thank you, sir. Okay. I'm going to take off your name off the board now. you guys just watch this. So there are two people. It's essentially a woman in ballet flats and in like a lot of flowy clothing, dancing, doing ballet. She's a ballerina dancing, and there's one woman director is sitting in the audience in big black glasses. Directing her, and that's it. And then the woman cuts herself on a teacup, and there's a key motif involved. Anybody pay attention to this?
Well, no, there was a lot.
It was all in black and white, and it was
that shit
pretty
just
and whatnot.
And I will say that I did miss some of the nuance. I saw there was clearly lots of ballet dancing going on.
Jesus Christ. I told you guys we were going to fucking talk about this when we went back in.
I'm not even lying here.
It's literally 3 minutes and 24 seconds long, and you can't pay attention for that
long. Well, you've seen it many times, and we just seen it once.
No. Tonight is the first time I watched the video. I just knew this is the second time I've seen it.
And not much actually happens during it. Come on now. Well, I mean, you described it. That's it.
But there's subtext going on, but now it's honestly, unimportant. Because
yes, Shane, it's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind of music
honestly,
videos. Okay.
Here's
it's not that kind of
what I can tell you is here's why I missed it. Part of it is because it's, clearly Monday and it past happy hour. I mean, come on. But beyond that, but it's because I have fallen in love with that song.
I know.
And I know that song so well that I didn't pay as much attention to the video as I typically would have.
There just seems to be like a through narrative going on in the video.
I think that there is, but we'll talk about it later. It's not like that big of a deal. I had some shit that I was going to bounce off you guys, but it's really...
Well, wait, what is it?
It seemed to me that the ballerina was in the whole key motif... No, you
let him finish,
bitch.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
It seemed to me that the woman that was dancing, you want to quit laughing at me? Or do you really want to hear
carry
this?
On, carry
I
on.
I do want to hear I started the pile on Shane. I'm sorry.
No, you pile on me all the goddamn night. I don't care, but I just want to know if you want to hear this.
I do want to hear it.
Okay, so because I don't care.
He cares.
Yes, we're wrapping it, and I really don't care.
He cares.
I really don't. It seems to me the key seemed like, you know what?
I want to hear it. I really do want to hear it.
It seemed to me that those are two sides, like an ego and an id kind of thing. And the key, like the woman, the straight-laced woman who's the director, that person dancing on stage is like her inner, who she wants to be. And the key that she had, the fact that there were keys, is like she won't let herself use the key and become that person. But you don't know this because you didn't watch the goddamn videos.
Do you think it's an id thing?
I guess I do, but yeah. I don't know. I was curious to see.
It sounds like more like superego versus ego.
From
how you're describing it.
Sure,
anyway.
Yeah.
No, the macro sense, Shane, before we get out of this and go back into Google, one of the things I would like to say is, like, I think it's a crying shame. Like, I think this, like, in terms of the song structure and the way that these guys put together records, like, even though they weren't together that long, like, I think it's a shame that there's not, that these guys didn't stay together, because I think that they made great music.
I can't believe I never heard of them before. Like, this, it's like...
Wait, how old is this?
This is 5 years old.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they're broken up.
That actually makes sense, because when I'm listening to this, I'm like, there's a lot of bands that have this sound that have come out in the last couple of years. So when you played it for me, I was thinking this is brand new. I was like, I'm not that impressed, because a lot of people sound like this now. But knowing it's 5 years old, I'm like, okay. Well, it sounds like they kind of maybe were one of the people starting this thing.
Yeah, it's just a pretty song.
And the guitars are beautiful on this. That's the main thing that struck me, is a real ringing sound to the guitars that I really liked.
The chime?
Yeah.
Chiming guitars.
Chiming. Yeah, you know all about those. All right, Mark, we belabored the point. Let's go back in. We'll see you guys in a sec. I'm glad that you guys all enjoyed watching that with me in the intermission there. So,
meh. My life has been enhanced.
I think you enjoy.
No, I really do like that song. It is fun. I won't lie.
Ganging up. You know, I think it kind of rotates, because, like, last week we were, like, totally all over Kevin. Well, and, you know, like, you finally got fed up. You finally, like, reached the point where you're like, you can say dad all you want, because we're always like, dad humor, dad humor.
I don't snap that off.
And you were like, you can say dad humor all you want, and I'm just going to keep doing it.
Well, and that's part of the dad rule, is that you acknowledge that there are some jokes that you say for fun, and there's some things that you say specifically for the groan. And, like, I'm okay with the groan.
Well, the groan is all right.
Yeah, I think the groan is endemic to dad humor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You kind of just encapsulated what dad humor was. That's
the definition of dad humor. It's like, ah, Christ.
It is.
Yeah. So, we're going to...
Change your socks.
I've appreciated listening to this record, and we'll listen to another clip again on our way out. What do we say? Dirty Boots?
Dirty Boots.
So, but before we get there, there's just a couple things I want to say. This album, for me... gets better and better toward the back end. The back end of this record, I think, is far superior to the first part of this.
Which is counter to what we've seen with almost every other record that we've listened to.
That's what I was going to say. What's
your favorite song off
this
album?
Disappearer.
Okay. Yeah,
like,
that was one of their three. That was one of their three singles off this, too.
I just saw that. I just noticed that. Like, when I was... So, when I was, I don't know, 20, right around the time that we met, when... one morning.
We met in what, 1993?
Yeah.
1992, maybe?
It was the Eiler's house, but nobody's interested, Ryan.
Yeah. I'm
not even interested.
How old are you, Ryan?
42.
You look like the new cast member on Saturday Night Live that nobody's taken seriously yet.
I'm not sure how to take that.
You're so young looking. You look like you're in your early 20s.
That's a thing that I hear pretty much every day of my life, by the way.
Yeah, well,
oh, yeah, and he knows it, too. Like, he's like,
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do about it, ladies?
There's much gray in this here beard, is all I'll say.
So,
well, it's dark in here.
Yeah.
I don't know what I can say, because you're always like, don't say too much because my mom might be listening in. So anyway, so let's just say I briefly sold Ecstasy when I was in college, and
that's a true thing.
And then,
you're just jumping right off the, you know, you're like, screw it, let's go all the way.
I know.
I drank human blood.
Chris, God damn it, dude. There's some things people
all
need
his
to know.
Secrets, yeah.
Yeah, there's some secrets.
Can I just point out that Chris is wearing a Sonic Youth shirt?
I am. I'm actually
is that
wearing
on purpose?
A Sonic Youth shirt.
Wow.
While we're doing
really?
The Sonic
no,
Youth
it
podcast.
Was an accident.
I thought it would be pretty amazing if you had just like, what, this whole thing?
You know, the thing about the Sonic Youth shirt is...
I don't even know this band, dude.
Thurston gave it to me.
No, he did not. So, although if I had talked to him any longer, he probably would have offered.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was, anyway, so the guy that was dealing me the extra deal for him, one night we were on some drug, I don't know what it was, I'll let you guys guess, and he was like, you know, My Bloody Valentine, they took what Sonic Youth made and made it beautiful, and I was like, yeah, but I had never heard a Sonic Youth song before. I was like, that sounds perfect. That's the most amazing thing you ever could have told me. And but it does kind of make sense. And then I was like, no, it doesn't make sense. Nah, later I'd listen to it and it doesn't make sense
well,
at all.
Well, I do think maybe Sonic Youth is sort of like a dirty My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, it's, right. So it didn't make any sense to me for a long time with better drums.
Well, so, you know, I mean, I like My Bloody Valentine, but it's really kind of Sonic Youth if you like ran like a it through a press.
That's what I'm saying.
Flattened it out. You
that,
know?
That was sort of.
It doesn't have rough edges.
Or it could be like Sonic Youth if you change studios 19 times.
And left your master tapes out in the sun.
I was like My Bloody Valentine's more like Jesus and Mary Chain if they added 10 times as much fun.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. Chris, good one. I knew you were coming in here for a reason. And you finally,
we have found
1 hour and 8 minutes in.
I've actually said something you agree with.
Said something that finally makes a lot of sense.
I think I'm actually going to go see the Psycho Candy tour. Where I want to see that.
Oh, are they back together again?
When they're going the and touring Brothers? With Psycho Candy, just doing that whole album.
Man.
Yeah.
You know Ride's going to be here in a couple months?
These are things we should see.
Yes, that's true.
However, we were going to listen to another clip.
We were, yes. But before we do so, I have one more small thing. And look, Mark is putting his head in his hands and shaking his head. This is a very short thing that I want
to
say,
Mark, like
about this.
Like a rock pillow.
Apparently, Thurston Moore is a huge Joni Mitchell fan and... tuned a lot of the alternate tunings, which they were famous for, he learned from trying to learn Joni Mitchell songs, which makes zero sense to me.
It makes about as much sense as them being into the Carpenters.
Yeah, their influences are baffling. I've never understood how they got their sound from the bands they always credit as who they love. I'm like, really? Where did that? Never mind.
Yeah,
I don't
want to. That sounds
know.
To me like it's also a little bit of like cool kidism. Like it's like, oh, well, we like all of these bands that you don't think that we would like because you weren't
that
avant-garde. Yes.
I mean, that's certainly very hypothetical.
That seemed really, really...
Certainly not scientific.
Nothing gimmick to the 90s, but it seems like, again, they were progenitors of
the anti-hipsterism.
Yeah. Yeah.
What,
I mean, that makes
what
sense.
What was it? I brought years and years... Well, years ago, when Ryan and I used to room together, I brought home the Hipster Handbook.
Hipster Handbook.
And I was like, hey, Ryan, listen to this. And I read him a passage, and he was like... Well, I've never really considered myself a joiner. And I was like, done.
Yeah, thanks.
Like, all right.
I just remember that book I think they were trying to coin a new hipster term, which was deck.
Yeah, that was.
But they used it all throughout the book, and it doesn't exist. It's
no,
not a
it
thing.
It doesn't exist.
But I would say, like.
But they were just trying to see if it'd catch on.
Sonic Youth probably did the least sensible, most hipster thing to do ever by saying, hey, we're getting really popular. Kids start to like us. Fuck, we need to start doing more noisy, unlistenable shit now and put out stuff like A Thousand Leaves. And you're
you gotta
love why
it.
Would you go from goo and dirty to and washing machine to like oh, we're getting a lot of success. Fuck those people.
Well, but again, like so if it was a 5-record deal, how many records into that deal was that? Like,
I don't know. That may have been – I think that was well past that, actually. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think they respected the Geffen deal and were like, okay, we'll give you your pop records.
Now
but then we're
going to
go
whatever.
Back and do noise.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to a clip real quick, and we'll get out of Sonic. Mark's going to have a heart attack if we don't do this. So let's go listen to Dirty Boots, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Sonic Youth.
Do it.
thing about this track is this is the second pop hit off this album, of which there really are only two straightforward pop hits, and this is definitely not as obviously wearing it on his sleeve, we want to be on 120 minutes a pop hit, as Cool Thing is. But the thing I always want to point out about Dirty Boots is Steve Shelley, the drummer of this band, is so great on this song. He's got this rhythm that's just so infectious. And the deal is like he bought a whole new drum kit for this album because Jay Maskus from Dinosaur was like, when they were going to a bigger production studio, they were doing a bigger everything. He's like, you're going to want to up your sound significantly to keep up with that, and convinced him to buy this huge kit. And this album, you can really hear it. And this song, you really hear it. And I think the heart of this song is Shelley's drum beat.
Well, that and the shakers, the percussion.
And didn't
really cool.
They did a certain amount of experimenting along the way, like you're talking about with the bigger drum kit. They also put him in a drum booth,
yep,
which hadn't necessarily done before. So they were able to isolate that sound in some pretty interesting ways.
Chris,
yes,
I'm really glad that you
joined
us. Yeah. Oh, what is that now?
Like, that's just
what voice?
He's like a random Muppet Sesame Street character.
I just do Muppet characters, apparently. Yeah.
We should, like, what is it, Avenue Q or something? Like, we should just have him star in his own, like, one man.
Well,
like,
you know the thing about Sonic Youth is.
And by the and also, by the way, I'm not going to give you any more whiskey next time you do this show. So.
I'm not coming without whiskey.
Oh, well, then I'll give you more whiskey.
That's what I said to
all
her.
All right, problem solved.
All right.
Hey, I really appreciate the fact that you let us, or gave us the idea to listen to this album, because, again, we haven't done enough indie rock. And
Well, no, and the record that I thought we were going to be doing, which we will be doing next week, which is Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, it was a nice counterbalance to
that. I called,
so I've been listening to both.
I called Ryan the other night. I was driving back to Austin, and I was really bored, and I called him. We talked for a little while, and he's like, so which album are we doing? And I was like, oh, we're going to be doing good because Chris is actually going to be making it this week. And he's like, well, I've been listening to both. And guess which one I like more? And I was like, the one that's not Bob Dylan? And
Can I throw out a suggestion for you guys for a future indie rock show, though? I know I don't know how familiar. I know y'all like to pick albums.
Oh, just take over.
I know how to.
No. We'll go ahead and ask.
We're getting notes from the network.
No, it's because
right
I'm actually. I don't mean it like that.
Preach.
I don't mean it like that. I mean it in the sense that I'm actually a fan of y'all's show. And I enjoy hearing what y'all do on here. I always have a fun time with it. And I love the concept that you're taking albums maybe you're not hyper familiar with. I don't know whether or not you are, but I was going to throw out Dinosaur Jr.'s You're Living All Over Me as a album that was like seminal indie rock album.
At least a Dinosaur Jr.
I'm
record. I don't know if it's that one.
That's the defining Dinosaur Jr. album, though. That's like the one that made them enormous.
Let's make this easy for everybody. Let's just say you come back on the show in
a few weeks, just do it then.
And we'll do it then.
And I kind of like the idea that maybe it just made Jay Maskus enormous, so like now he's like 25 feet tall.
Right? So, he's a kaiju. Yeah.
Yes,
at
exactly.
At this point, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, the next Godzilla movie, he's going to be fighting Jay Maskus.
It's a movie title.
Okay, so we're gonna do a
we've got a new clip.
Yeah, we've got a new clip that Kevin has refused to tell us, but
we're gonna watch
a video for the current affair and we'll be back in a second.
It's super different.
Okay.
Deserves a chance to walk with everyone else while holding down a job to keep my girl around and maybe buy me some new strings and her a night out on the weekend and we can win.
So, I don't know if you've ever seen A Handsome Family, but that was A Handsome Family who sang a song that, or put together a song that was featured
or at the very least,
was Family of the Year.
Also,
yeah, Handsome Family, a little country. Or
here's the thing: last night was the Oscars, and there was one of the things that came across my purview today was Chris's take on the people in Austin who were a little bit fussy that that Boyhood did not do better, and frankly, because they featured the sketchy liquor store at the front of my neighborhood, I kind of thought
that you can like walk to from your house.
I know, I was like
prominently featured in that
movie. It's prominently featured in that movie.
Austin turned into a much meaner Kanye West today.
I know. You know, right? Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, but the point being is that the scuttlebutt that I heard about this song, and part of the reason that I chose it, even though it's not per Shane's request,
as current as
some of the things that we would like to put out there, even if this breaks 10 days from the time that we're recording it right now, which is immediately after the Oscars, it struck me as kind of an interesting cultural touch point and worth at the very least talking about for a couple of minutes. And anyway, I guess the rumor was that somebody who was on the crew or who was connected to Linklater heard this song on KGSR, which is a local sort of Americana station for anybody who's not listening here in Austin. And it became sort of the, you know, sort of zeitgeist of that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to say right off, I really like this song a lot.
I do too.
I dug it too, and I think Shane kind of scowled while we were watching the video, and I'm not sure why.
It felt like Sufjan Stevens with a country twang.
It was good indie pop, like maybe a little right clean, but Shane was just not feeling it.
It was it's a well-written song. It's got a good hook. I'm glad that I had to watch a Chevy commercial for 3 minutes. And also, like, it's nice to know that Mumford & Sons have gone in a direction that's even more boring than the direction that they previously had headed in. At least I don't have to hear any more haze or banjos.
What is wrong with the banjo? All of you know Steve Martin plays the banjo.
There's nothing wrong with the banjo.
And well.
At all.
Well, yeah.
No, there's nothing wrong with the banjo, just like there's nothing wrong with the acoustic guitar. Nothing wrong with a well-placed hey. It's just when you put that stuff in there in such a calculated format as, let's see, a Monsters of Men. Well, they didn't do the banjo stuff, but
Lumineers.
Lumineers or Mumford & Sons, all the hay bands from a few years ago. Edward Sharp and the Magnetic
E-Sharp
Zeros.
Magnetic Zeros.
Fucking...
So I'm guessing
not
loved
unlistenable.
It? You loved it?
Well, okay, so having said that, and I'll stand by what I said before, I'd love to hear that song as done by somebody else than that. Like, that song
is a little extra clean production.
It's not the clean product. The guitar sounded amazing on it. What it sounds like to me is somebody said, you know what I'm going to do? I want to write a song for a Chevrolet commercial to be shown in the Heartland during the Super Bowl. Here's the song.
I mean,
the name of the song is fucking Hero. What? I mean, like, when you have, like, superlatives.
I obviously like it a lot more than you do. However, I do think it would...
Well, you're wrong.
It seems like it was designed to be played over a montage at somebody's rehearsal dinner.
Yeah, with the fucking... What's Homeboy's name has had... God damn it. Oh, I'm going to have to look this up online right now.
Robert Goulet. If you didn't tear up when Green Day was playing the Seinfeld montage.
The time of your life. Like, that's the other
one. Right, yeah. No, that's a perfect example. That is a time. Granted, that song kicks the shit out of and hits in the eyes with baseball bats, Time of Your Life. But they're very similar songs
in
sentiment.
Eyes with baseball bats. All right.
The hook is a monster hook. I just don't want to listen to it. Like, it's
well, and yeah, certainly everybody's entitled.
You're
so
cynical.
It's not cynical. Like, it's fucking taste. I mean, you can have I can have different taste than you. I mean, like, I'm sure as shit that there are things that I find moving and touching that you would roll your eyes and say, "Oh, that's rote sentimentality."
I don't know, I mean, man. This sounds like Shane Gate 2015. I don't. All I'm saying.
Whatever you want to think, whatever you want to say.
Right?
I just want the Chevrolet commercial. And by the way, outside of the parameters,
this is the point that I was going to make about this. Specifically about their take on the video. And one of the things I think that's interesting.
The video is just rodeo centric.
Well, and the song, but here's to that point. One of the things that we typically require of this particular segment is that we talk through not only the song, but like whatever the video is. And typically, if there are recent releases, like there is a video that's tied into that. And so, in this case, like that song has been put out there in conjunction with a very well publicized film. And
Boyhood.
And Boyhood. And seems to be, and feels congruent when put out there in short snippets in an Oscar scenario or whatever. But beyond that, one of the things I thought was really interesting was when I had never watched the video before a couple of days ago, and then seeing the way that they drilled down into the act, like, The thing about rodeo guys, and I don't know a lot, but I did.
Do you know any?
I know some.
I spent
a few years. I dated a girl that lived in Stephenville, which is where a lot of those guys.
You went to Texas Tech.
You went to Texas Tech out in the flatlands of.
And so the point being is like, and by the way, one day, if I have not already told it in this podcast, one day I will tell the story about the best and worst 4th of July celebration I've ever seen, and that happened in Stephenville, Texas, and it was amazing. But still, anyway, like a lot of these guys, like a lot of the rodeo pros, live out in that part of Texas, and they're little teeny tiny wiry guys, and it's a brutal sport, and it's sort of difficult physically. And so, anyway,
this guy's from Odessa, the singer?
Yeah. Like that's what
the guy
said.
In
Rodeo Central.
Yeah, he grew up or was born in Odessa or whatever. Like there is an Odessa reference to this fella
from the thing feller.
Yeah,
feller.
Mark's looking up. He's fact checking you right now. I was able to figure out like what I wanted to reference earlier, and when you were saying like this, having said whatever you said, like the song sounds like it's the release Doves part of the rehearsal dinner or whatever.
Could be.
Yeah. Like, well, no, it seems like it would play over a montage how the couple met.
That doesn't mean it's a bad song, though.
No, you're not trying to say that. Well, okay, but this is what I want to say. This is the example that I want to say. But this song makes me feel like the song You Are the Best Thing by Ray LaMontagne. Like, that song is as trite and as rote and as boring and is overused at every single wedding.
How do you work up the vitriol in like 5 minutes?
There's no vitriol. I'm passionate about it. I don't. I hate. Are you talking about this?
It's kind of impressive, actually.
No, like, man. Like it's like he heard it once, and he's got like a whole.
You know what's happening?
Like, packed and ready to go.
Shit. No, because the more that you guys fuck with me, the more that I'm like, yeah, I hate this fucking song, goddammit, and I'm gonna prove it to you why.
Okay.
Not really.
I will point out that Shane's like messed his hair up to where he kind of looks like Ian Rubbish now.
what is Ian Rubbish?
Oh, that was the Fred Armisen.
I was doing.
Oh my god!
Punk rock character from SNL.
Oh my god! You're
who,
so right.
Like was super punk rock, except that he really loved Margaret Thatcher.
All right, so you're the young guy from Saturday Night Live. You're Ian Rubbish, and you're Seth MacFarlane's brother, Kevin.
Hardly.
Yeah.
But still.
He's my brother, and
I'll tell you this: I've watched Family Guy, and I've spent a lot of time with Kevin, and Kevin is far funnier in my opinion than Seth MacFarlane.
We should probably wrap this up.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't hate the song. Look, I said what I had to say, but I will compare it to all the stuff that I did. You're right. Like maybe it's the cleanness of it, and maybe it's the Chevrolet commercial video that we just watched. But
it was like a rock, man.
It's worth mentioning. I didn't see any cars.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Like,
Wasn't the most appealing to me video, I'll hand you that.
It did have kind of a gauzy, family-friendly feel
to it.
But
the fact is, the guy's from Odessa. This is probably shit he grew up seeing all the time, whatever, you know?
I grew up around rampant racists, and, like, you know, like, I don't need to include that. And
I'm not sure that's an appropriate allegory.
Shane liked it less than the rest of us.
Okay.
I didn't like it that much less than the rest of
you. At the very least, I thought, like,
So we didn't go all the way through this, but one quick note was that Chris posted something to Facebook. Like, so you and I haven't been Facebook friends for very long, but one of the things
a week.
Yes. And so I've been counting the days. And so one of the things that Chris posted today was like, hey, by the way, all of you local people who are moaning about Boyhood not winning like the best picture, deal with it. Like, essentially, that was the gist of the post, yes?
Yeah. Basically, it was like, you know,
without going down the rabbit
stop
hole.
Stop being a hater on the films that did win, the film that did win Birdman because the film too. You wanted to win.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So anyway, like, but I did think it was interesting, like, in the context of, you know, the Hollywood is funny with superlatives. And especially at this time of year, and especially given the types of films that actually even make it to this point to be considered for that kind of stuff. And so, anyway, I just thought that this song was, it was an interesting cultural touch point.
I'm giving more shit to the song than I'm just ganging up on you because you came to me.
Dude, I'm leather at this point. I do want to say
one thing. Like, you were saying, like, stop ganging up on the movies that did win because they're good movies. And then I just had this idea, like, well, you know what would be, like, say, like, it were Boyhood that was up against, like, a random episode of 2.5 Men, and just, like, that somehow happened.
What if Chuck Woolery was then, in it, the last segment
right,
of Boyhood?
If a random episode of The Dating Game happened, and that one won, now then you have a beef.
You have a real point.
You have a genuine grievance to air.
But no, two good movies, like, faced off, and one of them got the top prize, the other one didn't.
Yeah, right. I mean, if it's just, like, some random, like, The Girls Next Door, like,
I'm
the
sure
thing
that
about
Rick Linklater has been very pleased with how his film has been received.
Exactly, that's the point. It's like, he made it to the Oscars, all attention is on Austin, this film that 20 years ago would never have been nominated for Best Picture, got nominated for Best Picture and is considered one of the major contenders.
You know, like, that's gravy. But in any case,
the Golden Globe
kids,
too. I mean,
kids, what are we doing next week? Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. Okay, so next week, you know what we're doing next week. We talked about it. It's your pick.
It's Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks.
I think you love that album slightly more than, or slightly less, I mean, than I love.
Well, I like it more than an enema.
Wow.
It'll be exciting, too, because
nobody's
ever talked
about
it. Can't
wait to talk about this. Keep you guys in suspense.
No one has ever discussed the importance of Blood on the Tracks in the context of it stinks.
Although, I will say this.
I don't think it stinks. We'll get into it.
And I haven't even started to listen to it yet, so I think that's great. But I also think, well, not the not listening, just that I'm looking forward to experiencing it. But also, I think that there's an opportunity for us to explore, like, I don't know, like, you guys hate the Coen brothers. There's a Llewellyn.
There's
Davis,
actually, there's a real
Llewellyn Davis.
Well, and I've already got, like, that through line.
What did I just do?
Ready to go.
Oh, Ryan and I don't like the Coen brothers.
What?
Yeah. Not Coen brothers. It's a whole thing.
They're like none of their films? Not even the Big Yet, right?
That's something to do with, like, Mark pointed out,
like
something to do
Lebowski.
With whiskey and juice.
You don't like the Big Lebowski?
Right. There's funny moments.
All right, I'm just saying right
Chris,
now.
Chris, we'll come on your show and we'll talk about
America,
it.
#ShaneGate 2015 is
hey,
all
dude,
I'm saying.
Ryan's the one that
no, man, I think my hatred of that movie ruined a relationship.
Oh, my God.
I don't hate the movie.
I would have broken up with you over that
but
movie.
But it's one of the most overrated movies in American cinema history.
That's all right.
That was really rude of me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, dude. Why you be dick? Why you fucking get into our house?
I know you're right.
So
we are going on.
But let me be the first to say, Chris, thanks for coming on tonight, man. This was really fun.
Thank you for having me here. I'd like to apologize for everyone here I've insulted.
Boy, it's like the Podfather over here.
Podfather. I keep trying to get out, and they keep pulling me back
Cephas
in.
Remark?
My boat, Cephas.
Yeah, you finally got it. The Podfather. We're gonna have the Podfather back soon, and the other Podfather
and
too.
When we
Brian Salisbury.
We gotta play him in with the Godfather music. I kind of.
I like that.
That's not a bad idea. Mark, you may want to add that in post.
Brian, I've talked to Brian already. He's interested in doing it. I'm a little scared to think what album he might pick, but I want to listen to
that.
I think
we can roll with the punches.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right, kids, let's get out.
There's nothing we haven't already said to each other.
All right, guys, we're going to do Blood on the Tracks next week. We'll see you next week. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Chris.
For producer Mark, I'm Kevin. Peace, yo.